Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español. Marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra. It is the final week without Gunnerblog, but my guest host this week, you might know him from another Arsenal podcast. It's Tayo Papula. He is, of course, part of the Yellow Boots On, the Tuesday Club, but a towering presence in his own right. Morning to you, Tayo.
Bless you. I like the towering presence bit. There's someone sniggering out there who realises that I'm 5 foot. Well, I'm smaller than Arshavin, actually. I think we found out once.
Did you do side-by-side measurement?
We actually did. And Damien did that thing like you do as a kid. You know when you put your hand on someone's head to check? And there goes Arshavin, just after he told us that he got most of his money in a bin bag, he was telling us that he was like, I can't do his accent, so I won't even try it. But yeah, he did. He enjoyed the fact he was smaller than me. I like to think that's the winning mentality of a professional footballer. It mattered more to him than me.
Tell me this thing about the bin bag. What was that? He keeps his money in a bin bag?
Oh, he had loads of money when he was in, he was at Zenit, wasn't he? He just bonuses and stuff would come over in a bag full of cash.
Right. That's not bad. Bags full of cash are very nice. I've never had a bin bag full of cash, unfortunately. Theo Walcott left the club with bin bags last week. Did you see that?
I saw that, and I heard the world's smallest violin playing in the background from it as well. But I hope he gets to. He'll come back and he'll get. He'll probably get what I call the new Arsenal reception, which is he'll probably get booed, which is ridiculous.
I don't think Theo Walcott will get booed.
I heard the Ox getting booed. I think we should all do the polite Theo clap when he comes back, though. You know the ineffectual, noiseless clap that he kind of perfected over the years
when he was being taken off.
When he was being substituted, yeah. Not a sound comes out of that Theo's clap, but your butterfly's wings are louder than that Theo clap. He left with his bin bags. I hope he does get a chance to come back and be appreciated, because I think he should be.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get booed. I mean, the Ox, I think, got a bit of booing because of the way it all happened, you know, the deadline day and the terrible performance at Anfield was his final parting gift to us all. What do you make of all this stuff? I mean, I know we're off topic here already and I don't want to spend too long on it, but it's quite amusing, isn't it, that he scored a couple of goals and all of a sudden there's this, like, the Ox is revitalized. All he needed was Klopp to get him going. After 17 years at Arsenal where he scored half a goal, now he scored three times in 5 months. Look at what a player, look at what this man has become. It's amazing, really, isn't it?
It is amazing. But, you know, I mean, we're living in an era of whatever narrative you've decided, you can fit the facts to it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's exactly that. If you're a fan, if you're anti our manager, then this is proof that he's stopped training players and look at what Sterling has been doing with Pep and so forth and so forth. You know, and okay, so well done. The Ox played well against City, and we scored that good goal against City. And I mean, look, if maybe a change, you know, the change is as good as the rest. Maybe anyone would have flourished if they'd been kind of stagnating at a club. It doesn't matter that it was, this manager and this club. But as I say, if that's what you want it to be about, then that's exactly what you'll get.
One man who is going to get booed when he comes back is Alexis Sanchez. He's definitely going to get booed, isn't he?
Really?
No, he is. I mean, I'm not saying that it's right or wrong but he just is. There's no avoiding it. We can talk about him. We will be talking about him a bit later, but there's no question that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, he'll get booed, and But he kind of looks more like a villain than Theo. I mean, booing Theo is just like kind of, you know, it's like
kicking
urinating,
a puppy.
Yeah, urinating on a baby lamb or something, you know what I mean? Or kicking a puppy, as you say. Mm. But Alexis can look dastardly and it will fit the bill. But yeah, we'll come on to him, I'm sure.
Yes, we certainly will. There's a bit to talk about in that regard. But look, should, yeah, just a little bit. Holy moly. But look, I think we should start with the football, given and all that this is supposedly a football podcast and not just transfers. It was almost last week or this week, you know, oh God, there's a game of football getting in the way of all the transfer news. This is terrible. But as it turned out, it was quite good.
It was. It was. Holy smokes! It was cold. I haven't been that cold at the Arsenal since. I think there was one Everton game in the Emirates which was absolutely freezing. I'm sure there's some old timers here saying, "Yeah, but you weren't at Winter Slug away in 1980, and that was as cold." So you can never please everyone. But yeah, it was really cold. I surprised myself and everyone around me by getting there on time, which means that I didn't miss the first two goals, which I probably would have done if I got there at my normal time.
Why do you get there late? What's that about? Are you just a late person, or is it just a habit or a superstition?
Yeah,
or
no, what? It's just sometimes a bit like kind of Arsenal on the pitch. If it's 21 degrees and with a light breeze westerly and everything's fine, then we'll win. So I leave myself just enough time to get to the ground if the universe works properly and London transport wasn't rubbish and the fact that, you know, the Highbury and Islington hasn't been kind of blocked off for about the last decade. So I tend to get there a couple of minutes late to lots of tutting of people on block 32. But it was great. I mean, the football was brilliant. We set off in the right kind of frame of mind. I mean, we were helped by the fact that Palace were so, so poor. I think it's not the first time, and we've done well at home recently, but you've got to put these kind of teams away. It was really exciting to see Jack Wilshere kind of looking quite imperious in the first half. It was great to see Alex Iwobi with confidence. And I mean, I'm saving him just because, you know, you save the best to last. Mm. It was just, you know, I spent most of the game tumescent watching, you know, Mesut Ozil. Mm. So, but yeah, I mean, Palace were poor, Benteke was anonymous, but we did really put those... and I'm really pleased for Nacho and Monreal come back into that side. Two good corners. I mean, the first time you think, oh, he's over here because it's possible, but he does it again, and Xhaka does it again, and we scored twice from it. And I think... I think Monreal, two assists.
Yeah, a goal and two assists.
Two assists, one goal, two assists, which is I think as many as he's done in.
That's more than Oxlade-Chamberlain has done in 15 years.
And it just goes to show, yeah, it's as many kind of results in his previous, I know 43 Premier League games beforehand.
Right.
So yeah, pleased for him. Shame that he got substituted, but just a really nice, exciting. You know, I was hoping for a 9. You know, you see Palace and you start thinking 9-1, don't you?
Mm.
Is it possible? But 26 minutes in, it was like the old school Arsenal where we got to 3-0 at half time and then switched off. We could have gone. You know, we could have gone to the pub. Could have gone to the pub then. So
I enjoyed that though. You know, I could see people saying afterwards on Twitter. And look, there's a lot to complain about. Yeah, these days there's a lot to discuss. There's a lot that you could you feel could be done better at the football club. But when you've been on the kind of run we've been on and playing the way we've been playing, and it hasn't been so great, and you know, wins have been hard to come by, and goals even have been a little bit hard to come by. When you win a game 4-1, you can't complain afterwards that we didn't win 8-0. You know, you just fucking can't. I'm sorry.
Oh,
you know,
oh really, Andrew?
Yeah.
Well, welcome to 2018 supporting football.
It is bizarre. I get why people say, well, we could have really turned the screw. We could have really, you know, yeah, we could have, but we didn't. And we won 4-1, and you know, it's been a long time since we've had a convincing win like that. I think the one against Huddersfield was a 5-0, but that was a strange one because it was quite close until what, maybe 65, 70 minutes that game, and somebody elbowed Mesut Ozil in the head and he got angry and started playing for 5 minutes and just took them apart.
And there is something to be said. I mean, I think you said in on Sunday's blog. There is something to be said for that elation. But it was also as nice. It was one of our lot, Bradley's birthday. So, you know, we got to, you know, knowing that you've got a nice sort of drink in the pub afterwards because you've got a win coming. I'm happy watching that movie for a change. I'm sick of the, you know, I'm sick of the 78th minute equaliser and the 87th minute winner movie. I know it's, you know, it feels fantastic, but sometimes it doesn't work that way. Interestingly, I mean, Arsenal went 4-0 up in 22 minutes, which is the earliest a side has led in a Premier League game. Can you remember? Can you think what the other time that has happened in the Premier League? Oh, where a side has been absolutely spanked a 4-0 up in the 22nd in 20 minutes.
Is it when Liverpool beat us at Anfield? Is it?
yeah. Ting! It is. So,
wow, we hold both that record on both sides. Wow.
I know. This is the joy of this club. So it was nice to be on the other side of it, definitely.
Mm. Yeah, and look, there's a lot to be said for a comfortable routine win. You know, if it's pedestrian, I far prefer a pedestrian second half to a second half where you're thinking, where the fuck is a goal going to come from? We must get it. Or you're trying to, you know, get a lead or, you know, pull one back because you've defended poorly and gone behind. I just much prefer it. I know it's not necessarily as exciting or it doesn't necessarily generate as much discussion or agitation, but that, I mean, it was overdue. It felt really long overdue to come out and actually just take a team apart in the opening stages of a game. I mean, look, a couple of set pieces. Normally, Palace would defend those better than they did, I think. But, you know, we were efficient with the chances that we made. I was curious to see Xhaka on the corners with Ozil back because Xhaka's been taking corners recently and they're hit and miss, you know? Mm. They're a bit Oxlade-Chamberlain's first season. You know what I mean? But you wait put in good
Oxlade
deliveries.
You wait till Oxlade-Chamberlain scores from a corner and that'll prove that going to Klopp.
If only Arsene Wenger had taught him how to score from corners.
But you're right. Yeah, I mean, Shaka's corners were, I think the first one was probably an accident, and then he did it again. That might be being a little unkind. But yeah, they were good deep corners. But I mean, the marking, who is it? Is it MacArthur,
perhaps?
One of them who lost Monreal like that, and for it to happen again so soon after was fantastic from our point of view. But as you say, you know, Palace were. They seem to be carrying a lot of players who, I mean, Kabai was walked around, really. And last time I looked at Kabai, I think, you know, I thought it was quite good. This is what happens when you don't see a team each week. I'm sure Palace fans could tell me differently. But I forgot that Benteke was on the pitch. I'd literally forgot he was on the pitch until he had one kind of offside touch in the second half. So they didn't put much up. And one thing I will say about what you said about half-time, going in at half time, it changes the mood and the like. The Liverpool mood when we came off at half time when we'd been dreadful against them recently. I mean, as a player, that's got to be horrible coming out to in the second half when your team are just like crossed arms, like, right, go on, impress me. You know, it's really kind of toxic. And also, I mean, the one good thing about that at halftime, I saw that one person said on the comments, actually, is that tie from who wears all the Arsenal gear when you said that I was doing... I was doing the Arsecast. It did remind me. I think it was halftime of the Liverpool game. Like, I mean, this is something like out of a Marvel comic, you know, when like the two heroes collide, Batman versus Spider-Man or something. Mm. But we had a situation like Monty Python couldn't have scripted it any better. You had Ty and our very own Keith Dover arguing in the urinals over some moot point. And I just looked and I just thought, if this is what terrible football gets us to, then, you know, I could do another season coming eighth because it was hilarious.
Oh, funny. But you should need a pocket recorder. That's the thing. You've got to capture those moments.
I know. As a radio producer, I was gutted that I wasn't ready at all times. But, yeah, it was just nicer in halftime to have a positive vibe, to be purring over, let's talk about him, to be purring over that kind of Ozil performance in the first half, and to be purring over Jack. And I mean, everyone played really well. It was like one of those kind of touch rugby games where you look really, really good because you've got no opposition.
Yeah. I mean, keeping Ozil now is so, so important, isn't it? I know it's a long shot at this point because, you know, at the end of January, he still hasn't signed a new contract. You know, the thing I'm clinging to now is the idea that Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang will signal some ambition that he can get behind. I think he likes Arsenal. He likes, certainly likes London from what we hear. But, you know, just in terms of keeping our star players and keeping those players there in order to help rebuild the squad, whether it's Arsene Wenger that does it or somebody else, that squad needs to be rebuilt, and it would be much better if we could do that with Ozil in the side. You know, yeah, maybe we can siphon off some of that Sanchez salary towards him.
I mean, there's been a lot of talk about kind of, you know, the money and the swap and so forth, but really interesting, the way I look at it ultimately is that on Saturday, against not the best opposition, but I know some, or not the best opposition, you know, a fantasy player sparkled. And that is why I go to the football, you know, that is why I go to the football. I would have, you know, we've been spoilt for them over in the Wenger era. I mean, if you want to count, I'm sure, if you want to count Dennis in the Wenger era, I appreciate he wasn't signed by him before anyone jumps in. But, you know, Robert Pires, you know how we both feel about him.
Yes.
Thierry, you may or may not want to put Cesc in that bracket. Van Persie was that kind of fantasy player where at that beautiful moment where just watching them have the ball is an absolute joy. It's what you go to the football for along with your mates. And Ozil has that, had that. And it is so important that we keep him. But you can talk about the ambition of the club and so forth. It's so important we keep him so that we can keep enjoying watching this team play. We've struggled with that recently because we haven't had that kind of dazzling, that glittery element. Mm. And I don't want to get all revisionist about Sanchez. Of course I don't want to, because he's been a fantastic player for us. But as someone who'd pay, you know, I'm someone who'd pay a double price ticket if I was guaranteed one, like, look away pass a game. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I'm always going to enjoy, like, the elan of Ozil over the industry of Sanchez kind of thing. And that is why he's such a joy to watch. And when he's as effective as he was, like, with that beautiful fourth goal, then, as you say, it's super important that we keep him.
Well, we'll see what happens in that regard. I want to talk a little bit about somebody who I know you're a fan of, and that's Alex Iwobi. And he's a player who this season has not really performed to the level I think we expect from him, or that we think he can perform at. And I think criticism of any player when they fall below the standards that you expect it's fair. It's not unreasonable to criticize a player. Personally, I think, you know, you've got to look at it in the context of the season, that he's in a team, he's still only 22. He's only in his, you know, third season. He's an academy graduate. He's come through the ranks at Arsenal. And he's playing in a team that isn't playing well as a team. And it's, you know, it's easy for young players to fall a little by the wayside when it comes to that. He had his little indiscretion the other weekend where he stayed up a bit late dancing with his friends, which is, you know, a truly shocking behavior, I know. But, you know, the manager's decision to keep him in the team, even if it was perhaps expedient because he didn't have the other options, he didn't want to use Walcott, he couldn't use Sanchez for the last few games because of what's going on there. But I think he got a performance out of Iwobi on Saturday that was, in some ways, him repaying the manager's faith in him. And perhaps we're seeing the way that the manager's handled it has been the right way to handle it for that player, because he looked refocused. He looked really on it. He was good from an attacking point of view. But what impressed me was the hard work and the defensive awareness and his willingness to get back and track runners and make tackles and just block off spaces. I thought he had a really, really good game. So if we're going to criticize him for playing poorly, which is everybody's right, I think we also have to give him some props for playing well. And he did play well against Palace.
I mean, I'm standing up waving a Nigerian flag as you said that, because it was beautifully put. No, I agree. I mean, you hear about confidence all the time. We're talking about a 21-year-old who is trying to kick on after sort of making an impression, and we know how difficult that is in this league and so forth. And he's looked short of confidence, I think, this season. And I mean, certainly in the final third, where he's made lots of kind of wrong decisions over the season. But I agree with you. I thought it was really impressive the way that as you know, when he lost the ball, which he still did because he's still trying stuff, he went herring after, you know, he went herring after his mistake and did actually kind of get a couple of turnovers as a result of that. I don't have those kind of stats in front of me, but you know, but I remember that. And there was that lovely shot after a lovely move, which unfortunately was straight at the keeper. But you know, he took that cleanly on a half volley from 20 odd yards out. I don't think he would have done that last week. Admittedly, he'd just scored, but he was in the position to score. He was picked out really well by Monreal, and he kind of, you know, he threw his kind of shoulders back after that, and played really well. And I think you're right. He does need to. But we, you know, we've seen this movie before, and I don't want. Obviously, I feel a bit more invested in him than most, but I don't the most of the other sort of young players who've kind of shone bright and then disappeared again. Arsene Wenger seems to be putting a lot of faith into him, and he wants this one to work, and he should do. I mean, he's physically super impressive. He's got great skill. He still makes the kind of odd wrong decision. I mean, we need to talk about that pass. After he'd had the ball kind of put in front of him by Ozil, you could argue that he could have put in Lacazette. I'm not sure many people would have done that. It's one of those hindsight things afterwards where he's that close to goal. Of course he was going to go for it.
But he didn't look up. That's the thing. I mean, he didn't. I watched the replay of that, and what a pass from Ozil. A lovely, lovely take as well from Iwobi. But he didn't look up. He didn't look up to the back post. And that was, I think, you know, part of what someone needs to sit down with him and say, look, when you're in that position, have a look up, see what's there. And if there's nothing there or nothing better, by all means, have a shot.
But you're right. He was impressive, and you want him to kick on. It'd be interesting to see whether he's in the side on Wednesday. But that pass happened in front of us, right? From where we sit. And just before Ozil plays it, he gives it the big swing like he was going to try and go cross field, like all the way across. Was it Lacazette who was on the other side? Of course it was.
Yeah, it was
Lacazette
yeah.
on the other side. And he just he got under it. He conned everyone. It was some shape-shifting, absolute juju. It lands sweetly on the enormous African thigh of Iwobi, who doesn't even have to break his stride. It was just such a gorgeous pass. I actually just soiled myself in my seat. So that was, you know, it was, that's the kind of magic we're talking about. That's the kind of... A more advanced player would have looked up and put that in, but I think he's worth sticking with. I think he's had a really tricky season, and it's really easy to criticise a 21-year-old. But I think Arsene Wenger's actually handled him quite well since his indiscretion.
So look, there was a moment in the first half when Monreal went off after his very impressive cameo. Precautionary, they said. I saw Monreal. Put up an Instagram story. I don't know if you saw this, but he made a cake. He put up an Instagram story of himself making a sponge cake of some kind. And the final part of the Instagram story was a picture of him eating the cake with the caption, "For my hamstring." So hopefully it's magic cake in that regard, because, you know, we could do with him. Arsene Wenger shifted to a back four, put the extra man into midfield, as we suspected he might do. But Monreal went off, and rather than bring on Sead Kolasinac, who is an international left-back and left-wing-back, he played a lot of his football at Schalke left-back, so it's not a position he's incapable of playing or anything like that. He brought on Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Did you read much into that, or should we read much into that? Or is it a case perhaps that Kolasinac, who's been out with an injury, just perhaps wasn't physically ready enough in the manager's mind?
Well, we've got, one of the questions coming up for the second half was about, you know, was about Kolasinac. Let's talk about him now. Was it, is he the new, is he new Luke, is he new Perez kind of thing? I don't think Arsene fancies him.
You don't think so?
I don't think so at the moment. I don't think it is, and I don't know if it's because of the formation things. He spoke about that before, whether he can play in the formation that we've been playing. or maybe he just hasn't kind of kicked on or picked up the tactical. I mean, I haven't seen that because I'm not a football coach of over 1,000 years and I've 1,000 matches even. Freudian slip. I love Ainsley Maitland-Niles. I love the confidence he's got. He's got that street football way of passing the ball short distances. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Where he's kind of, do you know what I mean by that? He kind of is close to my beloved look away pass, but he's just got a real ease to him. I mean, he was one point where he was too comfortable when he sold Elneny short, and then they and Zaha had a chance.
Mm.
But I've been super impressed with him, and I think at the moment he just thinks he's a better option at left back, especially. Given that he was chasing around Mr. Petulant,
Zaha.
A whiny little rant Zaha was on Saturday. I thought Maitland-Niles did really well against him. So maybe there was an issue of pace.
Perhaps.
It does seem like he's not got full confidence in his long-established left-back, as you say, left-back in his career, Kolasinac. So there does seem to be something there.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one. I think he's maybe perhaps not quite the player that he thought he was, or
that's what I mean about him not maybe fancying him as much. Mm. He's seen him, he's, you know, physically impressive. He's got that kind of, I mean, not that Arsenal fans are anything to trust, because I remember us all going beast for the first few weeks of Julio Baptista and loving all of that. And we know what garbage he turned out to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Kolasinac kind of looks like the folk hero sort. But perhaps he's not ended up being the player that he wants from him. I suspect that, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think the other thing to bear in mind is that he did or has had a number of injuries. He's been struggling with a bit of a hip injury since he got here. And, you know, sometimes it can take a player a while to settle into a club and to settle into a new team and to even gain the trust of a manager, you know. So I wouldn't... I wouldn't write him off or anything just yet, but certainly he seems to be struggling to convince the manager he's worth a place in the side, because when you bring off a left back and you put on a 20-year-old midfielder, basically, who you've been playing out of position as well as he's been doing there, there's something maybe a bit emasculating about that for the player, for Kolasinac, for example, you know, who would have assumed that if Monreal goes off, well, I'm the left back, I'm the backup left back, surely it'd be me. So I do wonder if there's something physical there.
He does seem
there.
To have dropped down down that pecking order. But, I mean, can I just ask you, I mean, how impressed are you with... Ainsley Maitland-Niles? I mean, it's a bizarre, you know, we've always laughed about how if you're new to the side, you end up on the left wing. It's a new development that, you know, you're now putting him at left back. How do you think, has he cost us many goals? And do you think he's going to move him into what we're told is his more natural position?
Well, I've liked what he's done, definitely, you know, and for a kid being played out of position as a fullback is a very difficult position to play. You know, people... at Sunday league level, it's where you put the guy who can't play, you just stick him at fullback. Mm. But in reality, it's a difficult position to play physically, positionally. You've got to be so defensively aware. I think he's done as well as anybody could expect. I think he's shown some really nice touches. What I like about him is his, you know, the way sometimes I don't want to sound like I'm kind of slagging off Oxlade-Chamberlain again, but you know when things didn't quite go right for Oxlade-Chamberlain, you could almost see him shrivel up.
Yeah.
Like his head went down, his shoulders would slump. Like, I think Maitland-Niles is completely the opposite. He just, okay, right, that didn't go well for me. Head up, keep going, just keep doing my thing. There was a bit on Arsenal.com last week. Oh God, I have to find these quotes while we're reading. And I just thought, his confidence was really something else. He was talking about being Vieira, was it? Hang on. Right, here it is. You know, he says, I'd say I'm more of a box-to-box midfielder, but the boss sees me in more of a Coquelin role, holding midfield and trying to break up the play. And then he says... I believe I could play as a traditional English number four, an English number eight, anywhere around the middle of the pitch. I've had a lot of things on Twitter comparing me to Patrick Vieira, you know. And then he goes, he says, I do see why they say that, because he was good at reading the game, very good technically, a great passer, and he'd love a challenge as well. I'm not shy of one either. And then he says, whoever anyone wants to compare me to, I'd always look to surpass them. Bring on the challenge, really. So, I mean, for a 20-year-old kid now, okay, there's levels of self-confidence, right? It's good that a young player is self-confident. Sometimes it can go a bit too far the other way. You end up in, you know, Bentner Town. But if this kid can keep his head properly screwed on, he doesn't look like he gets carried away at all. You know, he really does have self-confidence and belief in his own ability and belief in his ability to play and to go out on that pitch and perform alongside, you know, experienced, established pros, you know. So I think there's a real player in there, but obviously it's very early days. But what I think is interesting, I'm sure you've seen the latest update from David Ornstein from the BBC, the meme factory that is David Ornstein. It's remarkable. I do wonder what he thinks of all these things. If you don't know what's happening, basically people are photoshopping David's head into all kinds of situations. Some of them are just brilliant.
Some of them, I mean, I think. Well, I know he finds them. He finds them bemusing but funny, bemusing and amusing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sensational. I did have a good laugh at them.
They're brilliant. Anyway, he was saying that, you know, if we bring in Aubameyang, there are no more significant funds for any more transfers, I presume in this month, not ever again. But we definitely do have an issue in midfield. We have a problem with our midfield. And if we're not going to address that in the transfer market, you know, I'm on for Arsene Wenger giving Maitland-Niles a go, because it is just, number one, an acceptance that we've got to do something about it. And number two, okay, here's a young kid who looks like he's got lots of potential. Just fucking give him a go and see, you know, what's the worst that can happen? It's sink or swim. That's what football's about. And unless you give him that chance, then, you know, we're never going to know. So I think there could be something going on there. I think that perhaps he has looked at Maitland-Niles. If we move to a back four again and move to three in midfield, I think there's the potential for Maitland-Niles to be used in there.
But yeah, and I think you're right, and everything you said about his confidence is backed up, as I said, when you see him on the pitch. But equally, you know, we've just been talking about Alex Iwobi in the second, you know, and second difficult season. Now, if Ainsley Maitland-Niles, whose position is even more central and even more crucial than perhaps you'd say, you know, Iwobi's coming in that kind of attacking midfielder role where you can make a mistake.
Mm.
Do we want to put? Should we, as a club, be putting so much faith in such an important position in a 20-year-old? I can hear someone screaming Cesc behind me, but Cesc was something else.
Mm.
And it's a big ask for someone like that to carry us through the rest of the season. I think it's a shame that we haven't. I think it's a glaring error that we haven't fixed up that middle of the park where we've clearly struggled. But maybe he's thinking. I mean, Elneny had a good game again against poor opposition, and Elneny had a good game. I'm not a massive fan of his, but maybe he's thinking that we can squeeze it through to the end of the season, as you know, as we are. I'd be disappointed, but also pleased to see, you know, because I've got my hopes for this season have taken a dive anyway, and I just want to enjoy each game now. Maybe it'd be great to see him, and seeing more of Reece Nelson, who has been really exciting. Mm. The flashes that we've seen as well. And look, we're promoting youth, and you'd hope it doesn't cost points, but it is kind of what you want to see, isn't it, as a fan? It's what you get excited about.
Yeah, I mean, Reece Nelson got his Premier League debut, which is nice to see. And I think Tim Stillman made the point that we ended the game with three or four academy graduates on the pitch, which is, I think it's great. You know, we want to see these young players come through, and we want to see the club produce players who have the quality to play for us as well. It's not just a case of giving somebody a go because they've come up through the system. You give them a go because you think they're good enough and they've got the potential perhaps to make a career at Arsenal as a player. So, you know, with Iwobi, Maitland-Niles, Nelson, who else? Hector Bellerin, of course, has come through the academy via Jack. Barcelona. Jack Wilshere, you know, that's good. I think that's promising. And perhaps when you're moving into a an era that might be deemed a bit more collective than individual, which is what I think we're going to have to look at, and we'll deal with that in the questions, etc. You know, that's promising, and you know, we've had good crops of young players come through before. So it'll be nice to see that again.
What I like about Maitland-Niles is that he had a really good season on loan at Ipswich. So you know, he's gone and done some good hard yards in a hard league. I think he was given the, you know, I feel I'm laughing now because I know how little you care about shirt numbers. We've talked about this before, and I'm so bothered by them, and you think I'm a dick because of it. But he was given the number 7. He was given the number 7, Andrew,
at Ipswich.
At Ipswich, yeah.
Mick McCarthy loved him.
He did, yeah, yeah. He said he was one of the best players that season. So, so I like the fact that he's gone and been robust somewhere before. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, McCarthy said something like, "Wow, what talent he has! He's really gonna, you know, have a good chance of making it at Arsenal if he's given the opportunity." And to me, at the start of the season, he looked perhaps more like the kind of player who needed to go out on loan. But yeah, obviously, the manager has decided with the Europa League and the opportunity that that's given him to bring him through and develop him and develop some of the other young players as well. You know, because there's a couple of others as well bubbling under who haven't quite made the same impact. Obviously, Reece Nelson catches the eye because he's an attacking player, but Joe Willock looks like a good young player as well. And Ben Sheaf is another one who they have very high hopes for. Eddie Nketiah as well. So, you know, there is this crop of young players. Not all of them will make it, but it's good to see them at least being given a chance to show what they can do. So,
and look, I mean, we could have been doing an Ask Us 2 years ago talking about whether Bellerin was going to make it or not after his pretty shaky debut. So, and you know, revisionist current history aside, I think Bellerin's been a fantastic addition, and this is someone who was given a chance.
Mm.
It doesn't always work, but you have to always try, and this manager has done that time and again, much to his detriment. So it's good to see.
Mm. All right. Well, look, we're going to take a little break here. We've done part one. We've done the Palace game. We're going to come back and touch on all the other issues that are going on, all the transfers and all that kind of stuff with the questions and more in part two right after this.
So happy. This is fantastic. So happy. Fantastic. The fans so happy. This is fantastic. So happy. So happy, this is fantastic. So happy, this is fantastic. Fantastic. So happy I go to home with my dog.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where you send us questions and we do our best to answer the questions. You've sent them this week to at DJ Tayo and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearsblog. As is the custom for our guest hosts, you get to ask the first question. So let's go for it.
Okay, I'll kick off. This one's from ED at J_Ede on Twitter. Did not having Sanchez in the starting 11 actually impact our performance in a positive way, or are our fans just trying to make themselves feel better about him leaving for Manchester United? Mm. What do you think?
Probably more of the latter. in my opinion, you know. It's very easy when somebody's not there to point to them as being the problem. I mean, we didn't have him at Bournemouth and we played like absolute twats, you know, so I'm not sure it really stands up to any scrutiny in that regard. And I do think there is, naturally, when you're a fan, your defense mechanisms go up, don't they? You want to steel yourself against something that is unpalatable, you know, which is what, you know, a week ago, before all this really broke, we were all kind of okay-ish with him going to Man City, right? Yeah. It was like, ah, fuck, you know, Man City, you know, Guardiola, they're going to win the league. It's going to be easy for them. Why wouldn't he go there? And Manchester United's a different animal. It's a different beast because of who they are and who manages them, of course. And that makes it a problem. So, you know, a week ago, the idea of him going there would have been, you know, it had me furious in my own mind. I was absolutely spewing about the whole thing. And here we are a week down the line. I'm like, ah, fuck it. You know, we've been here too many times and seen it too many times to get really super unhappy about it. And, you know, we're getting a player in to replace him, who's a good player as well. You know, it hasn't gone well for him at United, but he is a really good player, Mkhitaryan. So, no, I don't think you can really put it down to Sanchez not being there, that all of a sudden we played well because Sanchez wasn't there. I can see how people might make the point that it would make us a bit less reliant on him or his individualism, that there may be more of a focus on the collective and playing in a more organized way, because essentially what he was like a whirling dervish of just relentless energy and running, who wanted to do everything himself as much as he possibly could to help the team win and to win. That's all he was interested in, was winning. And you could question some of his behaviors and everything else, but I don't think all of a sudden that we played well because he wasn't there. He's not the most popular man in the dressing room, it's fair to say. He's been a difficult character at times. I think we can see, right? If you follow him on Twitter or you follow his Instagram, he's a strange man, right? that's not an unfair compliment or an unfair thing to say. He's a bit of an oddball. And, you know, that's, it's not a criticism, it's just an observation. But, you know, as we talked about in the Arsecast on Friday, even when he's away with Chile, you know, he's not necessarily integrated. He's not one of the lads in the middle making all the jokes and all that kind of stuff.
I agree with you. It's more one than the other. And I don't think our fourth goal, it's about others picking up the slack, and maybe in the way that, you know, in the last days of Thierry, where they just looked up and passed to him, they had to pass to him. Mm. There does seem to be a bit of that with Alexis Sanchez. But just contrast, you know, someone has to pick up that slack, and just contrast him with the other best player in the team. That fourth, Sanchez doesn't score that kind of fourth goal for us. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Where, and the best bit, I mean, I love him. This is obvious. We all do. But just the way that Ozil ran off after sort of, he started the move, finished the move, just gave himself a little minute to run off by himself to congratulate himself after Lacazette scored. And they all headed towards Ozil. And he just looked kind of imperious like that. Mm. And that's the kind of, if not having, of course, you'd rather what his goals and his industry in the team. But I also want the team to work better. And if people can pick up the slack, if Ozil picks up the slack, and indeed Mkhitaryan, then I don't think we're going to... I won't say we won't miss him, because of course you miss someone as good as that, and you wish he didn't go to such a terrible, terrible asshole as Jose Mourinho. Mm. I did enjoy how much it angered you this week more than anyone, it seemed. Like, it made you furious.
It's just I hate Mourinho so much, and we'll talk about him in a minute, but just on your point about Ozil, it's worth re-watching that goal again, the Lacazette goal, and watch Lacazette's reaction when he goes over to Ozil and starts hugging him.
Yeah.
And he buries his face in his shoulder, and it's a bit like, never leave me, please. Never leave me, dad.
That's exactly how I read it. It's like, hold me, and they all just jump up, and he's just like, yeah, I did that. I did that and I can do this.
Look, the Mourinho thing is what pisses me off more than anything about this. It's not so much the Sanchez going to United, and I get, you know, I said it on the podcast on Friday, I get why he's going there, and I get why at 29 years of age, if someone offers you you fucking basically £500,000 a week to go play football for them, you'd be a fool not to turn it down. But you know, the manager of Manchester United could be Phil Collins, and I would be even fucking less furious than I am about Mourinho. There's just something about him. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on, I mean, how petty and how much of a grudge do you bear, or, you know, are you far too mature and beyond all that now to, I don't necessarily hope it goes badly for him, but you know, I would. Actually, no, that's true. That's a lie. That's a lie. I do hope it goes terribly for all concerned, particularly Mourinho. You know, I hope Mourinho finds Sanchez's oddness just impossible to take. Yeah, I mean, what do you think of him once he goes there? I mean, he's always done his best for us. You know, he's never really played up in the press like some players have in the past. You think of Nasri and Adi Bayor, even Van Persie to an extent. You know, those guys made their positions untenable. Sanchez never spoke out in the press, publicly at least. I think we all knew more or less what his position was. But, you know, I enjoyed him as an Arsenal player. I enjoyed what he did. He fucking was tremendous for us. He was great fun to watch when it worked. When he was frustrating, he was frustrating. But I mean, what's your thinking on how it should go for him up there and how you would like it to go?
I'd like it to go terribly. I'd like him to score, you know, two goals next season. I wish for a breakdown in his relationship with you know, the worst person this side of anyone, actually.
And there's a fair lot to choose from at the moment.
Yeah, it's a long list of people knocking on the door. But look, this Mourinho, you know, the Mourinho of Chelsea 2003, even, you know, of the bond that he had with his players, this Mourinho is so puffed up, has got such an incredible ego. I don't think you get any players now. Lingard is the kind of player in the past who would have, you know, run through walls for his manager, but this Mourinho is horrible. So there's room for it to go wrong in the way that we were told that Sanchez wanted to play specifically with Pep to get that bond back. I don't think that will happen with Mourinho. It will only happen just before they play us, where Mourinho will play up the relationship and how he's getting the best out of him, because that's what he does. So, but this one, I don't know. Maybe it's because we're getting a player the other way. Maybe because I don't think he will. I think this is it. I don't think Sanchez will propel Manchester United to the league title in the way that I'm still absolutely wounded by what Robin van Persie did that season, which is something that I could never, you know, they took our best player at the height of his powers and they weren't that much better than us at the time, and he won them the league. You know, that will kill me anything more always than this Sanchez departure, which has been coming with a player who has done his bit and has done more than his bit for us while he's been here, and he's moving on.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of the Mkhitaryan exchange? People say, look, Arsenal are getting a player that United don't want. He's had a poor time there. I mean, the situation with Mkhitaryan that happened in 2016, to my understanding, is that Arsenal were preparing to get rid of Alexis Sanchez. They were going to sell him that summer. They were bringing in Mkhitaryan as a replacement for Alexis Sanchez, not as many of us thought at the time. Oh, wow, they're going to bring in Mkhitaryan and we'll have Sanchez and we'll have Ozil. And, you know, it was one or the other. And Arsene Wenger changed his mind and kept Sanchez, and ultimately Mkhitaryan ended up at Manchester United, where it hasn't gone well for him because of the, you know, the horrible poisonous man who just treats some people like shit. But, you know, when you look at what he did at Dortmund, if we can get him to rediscover some of that mojo, then we've got a fucking player on our hands. Even if you've got questions about his mentality or whatever, he's got the potential, 100%.
100%. Someone looks like, it always looks like damaged goods when it's been through the, you know, the Mourinho mangle and it's someone else's player, and we've been scarred by, I mean, I'm scarred by Mikel Silvestre.
That's not so much a scar as like a huge lesion, a tumor. I don't know.
Yeah, it's an absolute crater in my shoulder every time I think, you know. He's a very Arsene Wenger player. If you take it back to 2016 and you look at this player, here's someone who plays between midfield and attack. I can already hear the press conference. He can play anywhere across the middle. He can play anywhere across the front if necessary. He's a very Arsene Wenger type player. And if you take away the baggage of it, then I think it is a very typical Arsene Wenger signing in the fact that there was someone else that we need more. But he is also going to be a technically brilliant player who could play very, very well, like you say, with Ozil and hopefully Aubameyang. So it does kind of lessen the blow. It's a very odd one for the club to go for, and you do wonder what's kind of gone on behind the scenes, really. But it does also indicate that we're very happy with the replacement for there to not be any money and for it to have gone quite smoothly, given, you know, the rancor between the clubs and the managers. It's quite surprising how well this has gone through with everyone quite happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, it's making the best of a bad situation, I think. And you can't overlook the fact that we're in this situation in the first place where one of our best players is leaving. And people can say, look, he's going for money. It is a ridiculous amount of money. Nobody would turn it down. But the desire to leave doesn't just come from money. It comes from the fact that, you know, these guys, when you're a player like Sanchez, when you're a world-class talent, you want to win things. And you at least want to be in a team that's got the potential to win those things, right? Champions League and Premier League. And, you know, much as I love us, we don't have that at this moment in time. So we've got to be aware of those sporting issues and be aware that, you know, if we do have this kind of top talent at the club, we've got to build around them and not just add one or two and think, well, they'll make the difference.
100%.
Because we've added Ozil and Sanchez and ended up lower down the league than we have when we had fucking Shamak.
And it gets harder and harder. It's been fashionable over the years. It gets harder and harder to criticise these players who keep on leaving because it stops being an accident. It is a very clear pattern. When you only sign Petr Cech after you've just won the FA Cup, then what does that say to your two best players? What does it say to them?
It's so frustrating, you know, that summer.
Hugely so. You know, you're asking people, and I remember the double think. I remember my own double think. Turning to Damien and going, well, no, you know, if these players are a year on, then that's just the same as a new sign. I could hear myself. I mean, I'm punching myself in the face thinking it, because what did we? It's all we could do, isn't it?
Anyway,
what have you got for me?
I've got something here now in a second. But are you pumped for the potential of Aubameyang?
New signings are exciting, especially new signings are really exciting. They're shiny new toys, and we don't get very many of them at Arsenal. And he's a bloody good player who scores loads and loads of goals. And if he's going to be trouble, then okay, then can he score a few goals beforehand, please? I'm really excited by it because it's just a huge new shiny world-class star. And again, that's what you get excited about. And you can talk, I don't care how much he costs because he's better than because he's better than what we've got, and he'll add some goals. We're about to lose 20 goals, 25 goals. So if he can score 10 before the end of the season, then he's done super well, and he should be exciting to watch. He's great watching him. I produce quite a bit of a. I have to watch quite a lot of Bundesliga football for work, and when I've seen him, it's like, holy smokes, he's decent.
Yeah, he knows where the fucking goal is, that's for sure. But on that whole situation, Jack Bernard, who's at Jack J. Bernard, asks, I've got no fucking clue how you get Aubameyang, Lacazette, Mkhitaryan and Ozil into a balanced team. Is this Arsene preparing for life without Ozil or even Lacazette? Did you see Arsene Wenger's answer about, you know, how would you get all that talent in the team? Did you see what he said?
I didn't, but I can guess. We'll go for it. What did he say?
Go on, you have a guess and say what you think.
When you have players of this talent, then they can perform effectively or indeed efficiently together. I have no doubts about that.
Sort of. But what he basically just said was, I just play all the good players.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's been, I mean, anyone, I've got no idea. It's a great question. How he's going to fit him in? I don't know, but I'd like to see it. It's not going to be any more of a strain on. Seeing as we can't defend anyway, so you know, maybe we'll go and do the old Aussie Idealist. If they score three, we'll score four. I'm up for seeing it, and I'm also up for seeing anything that's going to change or make our away form a bit more exciting, because that's the real disaster here. So anything with a bit more decisiveness, which those two will undoubtedly add, and goals and creativity, because that's what we've been lacking. You always want to get three or four. You want your three or four best players to get the ball on an attack, and it's been rare to see, you know, to have that kind of thing going between Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Jack Wilshere, Lacazette,
Ramsey.
You've suddenly got some options that we haven't had for a while. There's been some breakaway attacks which have broken down because, yes, we've been spoiled on, you know, Pires, Cole and Vieira, that kind of way. But things have broken down because we haven't had enough good attacking players in the team, a very, very basic thing. You know, people talk about the famous four at Liverpool, when we know about City's front three. We haven't had that. So having these players in the team, if it does mean just putting in the good players and going for it, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I do think perhaps it is a way of addressing. People say, well, if he's not going to buy a central midfielder, or he's not going to buy a centre half or a defender. I think this is kind of his way of dealing with defensive deficiency, is to make us more potent from an attacking point of view. Now, I don't know either if you can play Aubameyang, Lacazette, Mkhitaryan and Ozil in the same team. Even Ramsey, you know, to add an extra attacker to that. You know, I don't know exactly how you would do it. I don't see a situation where he's going to start playing two up front, but you can easily see how Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Aubameyang, there's a front three. Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Lacazette, there's another front three. You know, I know Aubameyang played wide a bit at Dortmund, but that's not where you don't spend all that money for a fucking 30, 40 goal a season striker and play him out wide. Well, maybe Arsene Wenger does, but you know. But, you know, I think it's going to be perhaps a bit of an either or between Lacazette and Aubameyang. And maybe that's not a bad thing. Mm. You know, maybe it's not a bad thing to have the depth there that we need. Maybe Lacazette won't be happy with it, but maybe he'll also just have to fucking work hard and take his chances as and when they come, you know? So I'm curious to see how it's going to go down, but I really do think that we're basically buying really good attacking players, or potentially really good attacking players, because we either don't care to go out and buy a midfielder, or haven't been able to find the kind of midfielder that we want, or just can't be arsed worrying about defending, because what's the point? We can't do it anyway. So let's make sure we've got plenty of goals in the team.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree. And speaking of those goals, I want to throw this question at you, because Karim Gorab is asking, why would it be bad to involve Giroud in the Aubameyang deal? I think because Giroud is a pretty good either-or option to Aubameyang, Welbeck and Lacazette, he's more reliable, in my opinion. I think he's just like, yeah, would it be bad to include Giroud in the Aubameyang deal? What do you think?
Would it be bad? If it's what it takes to get the Aubameyang deal done, then I'm okay with it. Like, if that's what the deal is going to hinge on, that they need a player and they need a striker and they want Giroud, then I think we should do what it takes. And if that means sending Giroud to Dortmund either permanently or on loan for the rest of the season, then I think we'd be mad not to. And I like Giroud. You know, I think he's a great option from the bench. He's got goals in him. He's been great for Arsenal. He turned down moves last summer to stay here because he was prepared to fight for his place. And I think, you know, you've got to give the guy credit for that. But if we bring in Aubameyang, and if we have Lacazette as it is, where and when is Giroud going to play at all? You know? So to me, it would make sense, even if I don't like the idea of being without him, and I think he's a much better player than he's been given credit for down the years at Arsenal. If there's no way of doing Aubameyang without moving Giroud on, then there's no question, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if it does become that kind of ultimatum, then yeah, of course. But it will feel I feel like we've lost a little bit. And, you know, I know there's a small matter of football, but winning and losing the transfer windows, as we know, is much more important. And I don't want... I think Giroud is... I think he remains more than just a fantastic option. I think we've I think we would have won more games than we have done with him in this period that he's been out.
Mm.
I think we struggle. I think he's even more vital, kind of like away from home, maybe than at our place. I hope, and the one in one out thing, given the sort of paucity of the squad as it is, makes me then a little less excited, really. But that's a fan, you know, talking who hoards books and records. So I'd like to hoard players a little bit as well. But I still think he's got a...
We'd be one down, wouldn't we? We'd be one down, actually, you know, if we were to move on in the one window, Sanchez, Ozil and Giroud, who between them scored, you know, 60-plus goals last season for us. That would be a remarkable thing to happen in one transfer window, to lose that many goals. And in reality, if we're only adding Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang, then we're basically an attacking player down. So
I'm happy with us giving them Danny Welbeck. Sorry, I know that's like kicking a puppy as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think Wenger. Maybe he would. I don't know. But yeah, I could see why. But I just don't see, if we have those players and if those players stay fit, where does Giroud play, or when does he play? Beyond like flinging him on in the last 15 minutes in games when we definitely need a goal. And maybe that's enough to keep him. Maybe that's a good enough reason to keep him. I don't know.
Yeah. I hope he's there on the 1st of February. I'm with you. I'd be surprised if he is at this moment.
Mm. Okay, I have a question here from Facebook. It comes from Chris Williams, and he says, do you think that despite all the negativity, things behind the scenes bode well? Backroom staff that seem free of Wenger's authority in their decision-making points to a change of guard in the near future. We just need the right manager to breathe life into the squad. In short, is Gazidis not the massive wanker we thought he was?
In short, let's go.
In short, I love that.
Look, none of us really know. And we started off talking about like sort of projections, and you believe kind of what you want. I like to think that this... I don't think these kind of decisions and these kind of players and these kind of moves would have gone ahead this time last year. So maybe that answers the question. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, we had Dick Law chasing Joel Campbell halfway across Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a special period that's passed. And now we're talking about some of the best talent in Germany coming to us. That does seem to be a change that's gone on behind the scenes. There does seem to be... I mean, some of Arsene's comments have been a little kind of barbed, you know, the whole, I don't know what a director of football is, or we know about the player. I think there was something about Sven Mislintat a couple of weeks ago about he may know a second division player in Germany that I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, little snips from a man who's managed over 1,000 times and is watching his kind of authority and expertise being questioned. So... And it's also been quite poignant, or noticeable, I should say, that we haven't had this year's Gazidis statement. So maybe he has just, you know, buttoned up his collar and said, "All right, mate. Well, I'm just going to go about. You'll see."
Yeah.
And just gone about it in a much more quiet and deft fashion than before. No big old statements.
Mm.
So there are changes being made. The fact that again, you don't know what's rubbish and what isn't, but whether it's a system set up more for an Ancelotti-type manager who comes in and just manages what's put in front of him because he doesn't really care about what's going on elsewhere. We're definitely getting, you know, Arsene's fingers are definitely being prized off the, you know, off the club, like gently, not so gently, but being bent back, and he's still gripping onto the bar.
Yeah.
You know the analogy I'm talking about. Yeah. So, yeah, I think there are changes being made behind the scenes. And whether Gazidis is going to come riding out on a horse in two seasons' time and told you and say, "I told you so," or not, I don't know. But there's still an element of you never know with Arsenal because we're never told anything unless it comes from David Ornstein.
Yeah, save us, David Ornstein. You're our only hope. No, I mean, I have to say, I'm a bit more encouraged than I was earlier in the summer or last summer, you know, when we heard about this catalyst for change and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, yeah, right. But, you know, we've brought in a head of recruitment. We're bringing in a director of football, even if he's not allowed to be called a director of football. There are things going on behind the scenes. You know, maybe we're seeing with the Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan deals that other people are involved in the transfer business to an extent. Now, of course, you've got to get those deals done and signed and over the line before we can make any judgments on them and their competency and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, look, you can't help but be a little bit encouraged by the fact we seem to be modernizing, and that's something we've needed to do for quite a while, right? So that's good. But, what you know, there's still part of me that looks at Gazidis as the guy who picks up £2.5 million every year with bonuses and comes out and just basically does PR for Arsene Wenger, like he did at the end of last season when the new contract was renewed. That, you know, on the one hand, we were hearing that Gazidis was opposed to giving Wenger a new contract, that he wanted things to change, but then he comes out and gives us the, you know, the PR guff about how he's the best man for the job and how our ambition is to win this, that, and the other, and we're no closer to any of that. So, you know, he's happy to pick up his money and say what he needs to say to pick up his money, but, you know, when Wenger goes, perhaps his influence will grow, and at that point we can decide whether or not he is doing a good job or whether he is indeed a massive wanker.
Yeah, that'll do. That'll do for now. I've got one. Did you know that they played Raspberry Beret at halftime?
I saw you tweet about it. Yeah,
very excited by that. So, with that in mind, we got a question here from Dave Mitchell at Tex Elmore. Of the 71 double winners, Graham's 89-91 team, and the Invincibles, who are the new power generation? Who are the Third Eye Girl and who are the Revolution from that? I hope that's not too niche for people.
It's definitely too niche for me. Obviously, I know what you're talking about in terms of Prince and his backing bands, but
I think we're trying to rate them. Is it an impossible?
Well, you would have to answer that because you're the you're the Prince expert.
Okay, well, I would say that as I have very little recollection of the 71 double winners, they're going to get the shitty end of the stick, and then I'll just duck all the old school Arsenal fans who are telling me that I don't know anything. In terms of, I'd say, young revolutionary team, I'm going to go for Graham's 89-91 team as the Revolution, which were Prince's best band. So they get that one, and by definition then we're going to put new power generation for the Invincibles, which might be unfair, but there was always a shiny gloss to them. I kind of prefer the rawness of a Merson and a Rowcastle or a Thomas, so
right?
That's what I'll answer that one myself.
Okay, and how excited were you to hear Prince at halftime? I mean, I feel like, with the greatest of respect to whoever is picking the tunes, that the, you know, there's room for improvement.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I never hated The Wonder of You as much as most people do. I do hate the fact that we play Jump Around by House of Pain, because that is the last refuge of the DJ scoundrel who plays Jump Around at any point, because it's just one of those tunes that shouldn't get heard. And not least because it makes Keith do this really awkward kind of stepping. It's somewhere between like the Running Man and like the sort of Monster Mash dance that he does.
And can he just not help himself?
He just does it. And I think he does it because he knows how much it annoys me.
Yeah, there's definitely room. I mean, we could perhaps one of the other improvements that Ivan Gazidis could make is, you know, have a DJ for a day situation at Arsenal where, you know, well-known DJ fans, perhaps we could get you on, we could get, you know, Giles Peterson on there picking the tunes at halftime.
Oh, That would be brilliant. I mean, you're partial to a late night MixLR kind of session.
This is true.
So it's probably a good thing then that we put it in the middle of the day, so to keep the whiskey consumption down. But yeah. I reckon you should have a turn as well.
Yeah, I'll have a go at that for sure. Yeah, that'd be great. Some really cheesy 80s stuff and loads of Bowie. That's what we Amazing. Get. But there you go. Okay, I have a question here. We'll have a couple of quick ones to finish off. And can I find it? Okay, Peter Lindlund says, as the defensive coach, is Steve Ball the only one to blame for our poor defensive display? If so, is he really a bigger liability than Arsene Wenger? I love this. I love this whole Steve Ball thing.
Well, I don't think Paolo Maldini would be able to get this team or Baresi or any of those kind of players to, would get this team. Arsenal aren't set up, and the manager isn't set up to care enough about the defensive side of things. So, I think the strain that our fullbacks are put under, the strain that our central defenders are put. I mean, they had they had some of their own strain, of course. But the way that we set up to play football, I think you'd have to be a miracle worker to get that to change, really. Mm. I don't think it's Steve. I certainly don't think it's Steve Bold's fault. I think we've always had this, apart from when we had sort of self-taught superhumans like TA and Sol Campbell, and indeed Steve Bold himself. Sol Campbell was the last of the super centre halves we had, or am I missing one?
Colo,
so
obviously, you know.
Colo, of course, alongside Sol. But I don't think. I just think it's a way that we play. We won't see any changes like that until we have a change of manager.
Yeah, I mean the thing is, Bold is not the defensive coach. I mean, he was a great defender, but as we know, Arsene Wenger still takes full control of all the training sessions. He micromanages all the training, and I just find this obsession with the whole "what does Steve Bold thing do" is amazing to me, because like, what the fuck does any assistant manager do? What do they expect an assistant manager to do? Or he just sits there. Well, what's he supposed to do? Other than, like, he does talk to Arsene. You see him there, like, the two of them muttering to each other and what have you. But, you know, when things go wrong at football clubs and when managers struggle to get their team playing well, how often do you see people going, well, must be the assistant manager's fault because he doesn't say very much when games are on? It's bizarre focus.
It's what we said again, Andrew. It's like, I mean, you'll find anything at this current time because Arsenal have always had a special relationship with the fans, in the sense that we said nothing. The club say nothing at all, and you start digging into. I mean, there's brilliant people on all aspects of the club now, whether it's the Swiss Ramble and the financial side of things, Tim every week for yourself, and so forth. People go and focus on stuff behind the scenes of the club, but it does feel like a bit of a reach to try and to lay anything specific at anyone else's door apart from the managers. West Stand Tone, we were just talking about DJs and it goes, West Stand Tone is asking, we're making a farewell mixtape for Alexis, and you're each invited to submit one track. What is it?
Okay, right. So we're making a... Is this for Alexis to listen to on his journey to Manchester?
Why not? Yeah, he got on his private jet yesterday. What was on the in-house player that... he's got tunes from everyone on here.
Yeah, his taste in music is really bad. There's been a fair smattering of Phil Collins on his Instagram stories when he's like running through the garden, slow motion with the dogs, and it's, you know, take a look at me now, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's got dodgy taste in music, but we want songs and we want music that he's not going to enjoy, right?
Yeah.
So... you'd have to play him something that's like truly dreadful. This isn't music that's going to make us feel better about him going there or making a statement. Like, you know, the only thing I could think of was Loser by Beck, because that's what I want him to be up there. But I'm going to have to go with something horrendous, like that Galway Girl song by Ed Sheeran. that's truly one of the worst pieces of music ever. Tracy Chapman's Fast Car.
I mean,
I just want that on a loop. Like the whole Guantanamo Bay thing going on there. Just play it over and over again until he goes slowly insane. Something like that, I think. Or, you know, something that's really, really irritating. Something like a terrible earworm, you know?
Yeah, I've had slightly longer to think of this than you. But right. I'm going to go for the Baha Men, Who Let the Dogs Out.
Oh, God, that's such a shit song, isn't it?
It's a really shit song, and maybe the woofing would distract him.
Who Let the Dogs Out as well? Of course, it wasn't just a shit song. It's a message.
It's a message.
It's
as
a
well
message
him, yeah.
to Alexis Sanchez. Okay. Well, look, we hope he has a disastrous time up there. I think that's fair to say. We're going to leave it there for this week. Tayo, thank you very much indeed for filling James's shoes today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been great actually listening to some different guests and stuff. And assuming that James comes back, in full health, then we can only celebrate that eighth place for the rest of the season.
But, yeah, there were a lot of people worried. There were a lot of people worried after we won 4-1 yesterday that something tragic had befallen him. Actually, I wonder has he.
Have you heard from him?
No, I haven't, actually. I'm just going to check his Twitter timeline. When's the last time he tweeted? 18 hours ago. He was talking to, actually, West Antone about Aubameyang's chrome car. Have you seen this? He's got a chrome motor car.
Has it? Well, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So he's coming in. He's going to keep a low profile.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not too many chrome cars around the streets of North London. I wouldn't have thought. Apart from yours, obviously, you know.
Apart from mine. I remember a story that, I don't know if it's ever true or not, but I heard that Kanu used to drive around or be driven around after games, just like sort of stopping around Finchley Park and stuff, talking to people. Because he was a bit lonely.
Really?
I don't know if it's true or not, but... yeah, you can sort of be a bit more anonymous in a sort of Toyota Prius than if you're going to try and do it in a
chrome Ferrari or whatever it is. I don't know what the fuck it is.
No, but thanks for having me. Look forward to normal service being resumed next week.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to all of you for listening. We don't actually have a game next weekend because it's FA Cup weekend, and of course we're not in the cup, but we do have a game on Wednesday. I think I have a little quick question before we go. It's from Stuart Joseph at Stuart Joseph, who says, do you think Wenger will play our first 11 on Wednesday in the Carabao Cup, given the convenient rest next weekend?
I think he has to.
Yeah.
I think he has to. I think it's a game that we need to win. It's a game that we want to win. It's all that we've got. It's the only trophy that he hasn't won. So if this is going to be his swan song, then let's take that. Look, it's 0-0. We've got a sign over, not so much a sign over Chelsea because we've drawn with them all the time, but which given how we've done against big teams is actually something to almost be celebrated. You know, it's going to be the fifth time that we played them this season, and we're at home. We have to go all out for the win. Seeing Willian back, I've always been a fan of Willian actually, and he does seem to cause us kind of historically a bit of trouble. But it should be a really good game with two teams really going for it. It's a cup tie with one game away from Wembley. What's not to celebrate?
Yeah, I the only reason I ever wanted us to bring Willian into the club was so he could score with his testicles, so we could use the headline Willian, it was really not in.
Oh, yes.
Come on.
Yes, you've been saving that one. That's a beaut. Yeah, you can have that one. Chapeau.
All right. We will hopefully find ourselves in a Wembley final this week if we can do the job against Chelsea. We'll discuss that in the Arsecast on Friday and whatever else comes up. Obviously, there'll be some transfer business hopefully completed at that point. So we'll deal with that on Friday. Tayo, thanks again. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.